time in 2019. But I'm so good at it, aren't I? And we like to do things we're good at. I know. How about if you find someone you don't know and haven't talked with and partner with them? Isn't handy you're sitting right, Lisa, you better start and move on there. Now, again, I understand that there are some people in the queue.
I think there was a question on the board about the trio once again, for you to re-explain the trio. And we promised that the next newsletter article would be an audio version of that from Sherry.
That's right. And that is supposed to, I know I start getting prompts to write that article on the 12th of the month, and then I usually manage to get it in about the 28th. So maybe this
comes... Usually the 20th, because it comes out on the 21st or the 22nd. Huh? We manage to get you in by then.
And so we could be really punctual this month. Very good. All right, who's in the queue? Katie.
One of the things that we did was the debate and the dialogue.
The debate and the dialogue.
Yes, and I noticed in the debate, my partner was a female partner, and the style, we'll say, was collaborative even though we were debating. I don't know if kind is the right word, it just had a certain feel. And after we finished, I thought, I've had many conversations where that other person tried to dominate, or tried to, the way that they were coming at me, and I rise to that and have to be bigger. Mm-hmm. And I realized the karmic lens that we have spoken with, of how that's kind of filtering through.
Mm-hmm. And that might not be the kind of mirroring that you would necessarily like to pursue?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. No. And what I wanted to ask guidance about was, the topics we were discussing were very neutral. Mine was a unicorn, and hers was an orange. And so, these are very, these are fun and neutral, but we know in the other world that many topics are not neutral. And so I was looking for some guidance on how to talk about or talk with someone about things that are hard. And I could give an example, or if you...
have had a hard conversation.
A recent conversation. Yes, with a neighbor. I was walking my dog. Just wanted to say hello, and then he said something that shocked me, and I wasn't really expecting. And I just didn't talk anymore. And I said, "Okay, have a good day," and left because I really didn't agree with what he had said. And so I didn't. I don't know if you want to know what was said or if that helps.
We'll say it's political. It was political. Uh-huh. Yeah, well, 'tis the season.
Yes, and that's why I'd like some love guidance. Because going into the new year, this is what we're going to be seeing a lot of.
Yeah. There are several things to me about that. One, you were walking your dog. You just wanted to say hello. You really didn't want to get into this. Period, right? It wasn't the time or the place or your interest. So it seems like just saying, okay, well, lovely to see you. Which might have been a stretch, but marginally true, right? And we always strive for that, right? There's always something that is true, right, that we can say. But one of the things that I like best which I didn't do right then, is yes, and. It's one of my favorite techniques. I don't know if you folks practice that at all today, but he says what he says, and you say yes. Now, the yes can simply be, yes, you said that. Yes, I heard you say that. And then you can offer your perspective. Okay? And there will probably be something coming back toward you. And if you feel like reflecting it, you know, one of the things, so much of it depends on the circumstances, mm-hmm. right? If this is a coworker, this is somebody you're going to have to deal with day in and day out. So you're going to have to come up with a way that you want to be in this relationship that takes care of you, you know, mm-hmm. versus a neighbor who you see when you're walking your dog, and you probably are not that interested, I'm projecting, in a relationship.
We're right next door to each other.
Yeah.
Townhomes. So we do, I've known him for 10 years. So there is a vested interest, and one of the reasons I did not comment
uh-huh.
back, uh-huh. because I was so shocked by what he said.
Yeah. And so with that, it's you want to protect the relationship. So you really do want to stay neutral in this. However, you do really want to tell him what you think.
Well, that's the truth, yes.
Yeah.
Because the comment, well, and my approach, because the comment was, you know, when Trump gets reelected, everything will be great, and he'll stop the border and the pedophiles from coming across the border.
Okay. Oh,
and
great.
Yes. So you see why, and this is how I wanted on so many levels to say, have you, you know, seen the facts? Have you done your research? Which I know isn't helpful. I wanted to say, yes, and I also think children should be protected from pedophiles, because at least we can agree there.
Or, you know, it depends on where you want to go, whether you want to get into the content of it or not, because it would also be possible to say something like, yes, and if Trump is reelected, I plan to commit suicide. I think I have a good day. You know, I mean, there's an argument for meeting people where they are. And that's an outrageous thing to say in passing to your neighbor, right? And anybody who's not dialed into that at this point, I don't think you can upset or offend. I really don't. There's not enough going on there that you have to worry about. So to take it seriously, you know, just seem, I mean, if you want to, but you could also think of him as a comedian. You know, improv. He just saw a neighbor and thought he would blurt that out. Yeah, so it's so much of it depends on what's going on with you in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, what we're talking about here is mastery. Mm-hmm. It really is. There's no formula for life. Right? We just have to be present and see what happens in the moment. And if you view it that way, then you'll get to practice with, you know, I keep going, do you know what I'm referring to when I talk about the guy who walked out of the room backwards with his slippers on his head? It's a very famous old Zen story. And it's kind of designed to put people in a place, right? And now, not to give anything away, but I suspect what's being pointed at is the kind of thing that happens when people are present. And so that could be fun. To just, the next time you encounter him, just see what drops in. Mm-hmm. If you go to conditioned mind, then you're going to try to educate him on the border wall and pedophiles and that sort of thing. Which, really, why?
And that is where,
yeah. It just wears you out to think about it, doesn't it? Yeah. And you know it's not going to make any difference. You know it's not going to make any difference. So, you know, you want to save that stuff for some place where it might actually land or be helpful or kind or something. Mm-hmm. So, That's a long way of saying it's really up to you. And if you do want to engage, try the yes and. Well, gee, you know, so many of my relatives have been pedophiles. I'm really glad we got in here. Who else? Jodine.
The exercises from this retreat are brilliant. I'm just having an amazing time. And I saw something about projection today that seems important. And it was about the debate, dialogue, process thing. So, you know, so we went through it, and then I got to hear my partner's process. And it was like, oh, like, that makes perfect sense. You know, she described how she was doing the exercise. And in the exercise, the debate dialogue, I was like, you know, conditioning was like talking to me all the time, like, what is her trip? You know, like, what?
Nobody takes this personally, right? When your partner says right out loud what they were thinking as you were, doing whatever, we must not take it personally.
You know, like, there's all this projection going on about why somebody would take the exercise so seriously, it seemed like.
Did you have oranges or unicorns?
Well, we had a toothbrush and a drafting table. And even though, like, anything I said about the toothbrush, which was my thing, everything I said I thought was kind of absurd. Like, she was right there with a counter-argument. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like... you know, she wanted to be a lawyer, I guess. Anyhow, so I'm projecting. And then we get through to the end, and she described in her process that... she knows she has a tendency to take debates really seriously, especially if there's like high stakes.
Like toothbrushes.
Well, and she was using the exercise to explore that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh. But the thing is, like, I would never have projected that, because it would never have occurred to me.
Right. However, the fact that things would never occur to us does not stop us from believing what is being projected.
Well, yeah, like I'm, you know, projecting the lawyer thing on the Supreme Court or something, you know. And it was a reasonable explanation for why somebody would do it that way.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I was like, I mean, I wasn't really believing it because it was a little bit absurd itself, you know, like, but it seemed believable, right? So.
What she said?
No, see, my projections seemed believable to me.
Oh, of course they always do.
Right.
Yeah, and the reason that we continue with it is that we usually don't get to check it out. We have no idea, so we just go around assuming that what we're projecting onto people is what's really happening.
You know, and then I just thought, like, whoa, you know, the processing, like, how much would I like to know, you know, another person's process in, like, every part of my life?
Can you imagine? Can you imagine if we grew up being encouraged to be fascinated? Mm-hmm. By how other people operate. Mm-hmm. rather than this is what's right and this is what's wrong and this is how you should be and this is what's wrong with everybody else, and now go out there and fight them. If we were really interested in how did you get there? What does that? But that's not a part of the deal. I mean, that's not a part of the deal, even in really close relationships. Still meant to just project, figure it out, assume you've got it right, go from there. And so, I mean, we can see the world of suffering. That's great. Thank you. Were you on the list?
I was. I am.
Good man.
a topic that came up earlier today was expanded awareness, and as it came up, I was like, this sounds really important, but I wasn't quite getting it. And then it's been dropping in the past couple of hours, this hunch that it's important, but I don't feel like I have a total understanding of what expanded awareness is. If you wouldn't mind speaking on that, on what it is.
I wouldn't mind at all. In fact, I would love it. So we're talking, and you're looking at me. You're watching me as I'm talking. And as you continue to do that, can you feel the presence of the other people in the room?
Yeah.
Yeah, even though you're still engaged with me in this conversation.
Yes.
And can you hear the sound of that motor or whatever that is that's operating?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you can have a sense of the light above you, even though your attention is on me?
Yes, it's very bright up there.
Yes. That's expanded awareness. Okay. So most of the time, what's happening to us is that we're attending to attention. So whatever we're focused on becomes the whole world. And we just lose sight of. The first thing most people lose sight of is their body, right? So not having any idea of where your body is in space or what it's doing or any of that sort of thing. And certainly not what's going on around.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most deadly places is people will get focused on what conditioned mind is doing and lose awareness of conditioned mind.
Yes, and I feel like that's what keeps dropping into me these past couple hours. But just to make sure I'm understanding it correctly, so if I'm with a friend and I'm seeing the conditioning that's happening in my friend, I'm just seeing it.
Right.
And then I'm seeing it, and then in the ego or... Yeah, the voices are saying, you shouldn't be judging your friend that you shouldn't be judging your friend that way. That's part, if I'm understanding correctly, that's part of expanded awareness.
That's right.
And a lot of the suffering that I project that happens for me or has been coming up is then there's the conversation that takes place with the ego that's happening, which now the attention's not on the friend.
Precisely.
Okay.
Yes. And there is a loss of awareness of the awareness that is holding all of that.
There's a loss of awareness. Can you say that last part again?
Of the awareness that is holding all of that. So we, in that case, you would lose sight of the fact that what you actually are in that is the awareness that is aware of the friend, the conversation, the focus on the conversation, the focus on the conversation that excludes the friend.
Yes.
You're aware of all of that.
Yes, and that's okay.
It's way beyond okay. Because what it leads us to when we stay in that is the awareness that what you actually are is that awareness. So the conversation and conditioned mind is trying desperately to get us to believe that that's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
That we identify with that. It's just me. I'm just thinking. I'm just whatever. As we pay attention, we realize that I'm actually hearing that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying those things. I'm hearing them. I'm watching that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching it from awareness.
Mm-hmm. And you are awareness, and awareness is all
encompassing. Yes, exactly so. Cool, huh?
Yeah, nice.
Anne.
I'm not on the list.
Oh, well, wait.
Anne, I wanted to say something about yes, Anne, at some point.
Okay, all right.
Carol.
Who, which Carol? Oh.
Hi. It's a little scrambled now, but at the time it was clear. So what they were talking about was they were doing the facilitating, and then somebody got identified, and then the other person had to, what's the other part called?
We were processing.
They were processing, and then they had to switch to
facilitation.
Facilitation, because the other person got identified, and it was all very kind, and it was wonderful. And then the question came up about, like in a way where we know that conditioning has affected us, but we don't want to put it center stage, in a way of almost not giving your power away, but you're identifying that you got hooked and snagged. And so, like she said, not validating it, but we're outing it. And I was going to ask if they could do a role play, because they were there doing it, other role plays. But I don't know.
A role play on a particular content?
Any content.
For you, or just, oh, any content.
Any content, but the process of not giving your power away, not excusing, like, oh, I might not know, I might be wrong. You know, but doing it in a way that outs conditioning, where you're looking at it, not through it. But and then I lost the end trail of it. Do you happen to know what I mean?
She's got it. You want to get your
Jeff?
Other processor?
Yeah.
Come on up here, other processor.
Shall I be identified again?
Sure. Do you want to demo what she said?
I'm just trying to think of a scenario that would involve that.
Well, let me get identified.
So you're
going to
help. Okay, got it.
So,
or I'm going to start the process.
You're going to process, okay.
Can I process something with you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Can I process something
with
you?
Can I process something with you?
I noticed that it's important to me that the kitchen is tidy, mm-hmm. and I just noticed that when I come home at the end of a long day, and there are dishes in the sink, it's not even so much the dishes, but there's just a sense of deflation at, the kitchen is dirty again. And I struggle with that.
Are you saying that I'm the one who leaves the kitchen dirty?
Well, actually, I
kind of mention it
around the kitchen.
Isn't that just your business? Why would you say that to me? Do you know how upset I get when you tell me things like that and you don't give me a chance to defend myself and you just walk in and lay the blame on the kitchen on me? How often have we had this kind of conversation?
Uh-huh. So for you, it feels like when I come at you with something like that, that it's really challenging for you to be able to hear that, because it feels like we've had this conversation a number of times and that I'm just laying it at your feet.
Exactly so. That's exactly what's going on for me. And you know what? I'm so sorry that I just snapped, but I was aware that I suddenly felt threatened,
uh-huh.
and I reacted rather than actually, you know, just taking a moment and listening to what you had to say. I apologize.
Well, that's good.
And they lived happily ever after. And the kitchen was always clean.
So
because it's not like, oh, the devil made me do it. You know, it's like, you owned your stuff, you know.
Right.
I...
So I, she was processing, I got identified, she facilitated, I still was identified, then I noticed what the voice was telling me, and so I just owned my stuff.
Yes, that's what I wanted. That's wonderful. Thank you.
And I think that one of the things that was powerful about what we were looking at this afternoon is that an option from, you know, I switched to facilitation because, as we were talking about this afternoon, right, we set the ground rules, we agreed on it, and then she essentially got identified and broke the ground rules. So I switched to facilitation, and if she didn't suddenly see her process the way she did, my option is just to continue to facilitate, and probably what I would do is just quietly bring the conversation to a close and move on to the next thing, and then find my next opportunity to try again.
To point out to her what she's doing wrong.
I actually was trying to demonstrate it, so I didn't do it really that skillfully. But I think the example with Elizabeth was really clear, where she was saying, so I think she said she was in a conversation with somebody and she was offering what was making was upsetting to her. And inside her head, what she was hearing the voices say is, why are they making such a big deal about it?
Yeah.
Right? And what is possible in that place is to just go, you know what? I have a feeling that you might be thinking that I'm making a big deal about it. Would you tell me if I'm really making a big deal about it? Because there I'm very aware of what the voices are doing to me, and I'm just saying what they're doing to me in order not to let myself get identified. And checking it out with the other person.
So you're saying it as though it's occurring to me.
Yes.
We don't have to talk about this over here, but it's occurring to me. Because nobody needs to hear all that business.
Yeah, because I could have also not apologized, because you said you don't want to say you're wrong, but I could have just said, uh-huh, so hang on a second, Jen. I realized that you weren't actually accusing me of anything. Mm-hmm. I was feeling that level of criticism, but that's not what you were doing. Mm-hmm. That would be another skillful way of saying.
Never had it end that way.
and one of the things I would add here, she said I've never had it end that way. And here's my experience of it and my projection, is that if we've had this dynamic going on forever, and I'm suddenly willing to kind of drop my weapons, if you will, it might take a little while for that trust to build, right, in that relationship. This has been my experience with people in my life that don't do practice, that it can take a long time for them to get it. She's never going to come at me, no matter what. But it can take a really long time for the other person to metaphorically drop their weapons, because that dynamic has been there for so long. It's just like with ourselves internally, right? There can be parts of us who have gone forever without being heard. And so, you know, the first three two-handed recording exercises, and they don't want to be heard. Well, it might take longer than that. Mm-hmm. There's some time in there.
Yeah. It seems like a really big part of it is our willingness to be vulnerable.
To talk about our process.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's what if we don't have that, then it really is never going to work.
Well, and one of the things that was dropping in from a group this afternoon is that's why there's a clarification of what's happening in the right hand. If it's what we practice with the right hand, which is the ability to talk about my process, as Jen was talking about, not just from the place of identification, but part of what we were looking at today was being able to talk about my process, which then assists me to talk about my process, not to the recorder.
Uh-huh.
Right?
If there's a real person there.
That's right. So I might have a lot of emotion, and then once I speak about my emotion, I can also say, so what was really going on for me was that I was feeling threatened. That's what the listening assists us to do. If a person is talking about why they're angry, then when you listen, you want to listen to what's really going on for them, and that's their process. Mm-hmm. They got angry because they were threatened. They were feeling threatened. And you want to get to that in the two-handed recording exercise to get to your process. Mm-hmm. Then you would actually have clarity about being able to say it to someone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you got so, metaphor in this example, you got so familiar with your own process of feeling defensive that in the middle of, as you're getting identified, being talked to, you were able to see, oh, that's that thing of being defensive, and you were able to call.
Yeah.
Call it.
Call it.
Thank you.
Little theater players. Thank you. Who else? From today, earlier. Is that six? I wasn't keeping count.
There may have only been four, actually.
Hmm?
There may have only been four this time.
Yeah.
Well, maybe two people don't want to talk. Were you one
I'm
of them?
I'm not on the list.
Oh, you're
I'm
not on
a
the list.
List.
All right, you're
no,
up.
In other words, Chair, I think maybe we only had four left from the afternoon. I
Yeah. So six was an incorrect number. I made that up. All right, good. Well, let me hear from Ann, and then I'll be back to you, Deanna.
Well, I just wanted to say something about your favorite technique, yes, Ann, because it just feels so important, for me at least. I remember when I first came to this practice, I was kind of shocked that I would come to guidance, and what I feel like I got, because I obviously got it, was yes. Because I don't think I had ever had that experience before, where somebody said yes to my experience. And, I mean, I think he would say yes and a lot, but what I remember is yes, because that felt so reassuring. And I'm so grateful that you mentioned it tonight, because I think what I want to take with me is realizing that that's probably most people's experience out in the world, that nobody is ever saying yes to them. They're always saying no. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, we're defensive, mm-hmm. because this is my experience and nobody will say yes to it.
Yes. And the and doesn't at all negate the yes, does it?
Exactly.
Because you tell me what your experience is, and I can say yes to that. What else am I going to say? It's your experience.
Yeah.
Right? And there's always more that's possible for us to see. There's additional information that's available to us. And very often, with what you're pointing out, we're so used to hearing no, inside and outside, that it's a revelation that there is more. Because we're just so stuck in that cul-de-sac of no. So to have somebody say yes and then add to your experience, add to the possibility, really does begin to open things up for us.
Yes, and I think one of the other reasons it's so powerful is I think part of the trauma of childhood is that's what happens. We're going along in innocence and we're told no. So, I'm hungry. Well, you can't possibly be hungry, you just had lunch. Or, wear a sweater. Well, I'm not cold. Well, of course you're cold. It's constant. No, 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 that's not your experience. And so for me, it was such a relief to come to a practice that said, well, of course that's your experience. It's your experience. And so it's just a helpful reminder to me that that's what I want to be able to offer. I want to be able to validate people's experience. And it's so simple.
It is so very simple. Yeah.
Even for people who think Trump should be re-elected.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to what we were talking about last night. And some of it is the preconditions behind a conversation. So I've had this pattern with my brother. He gets home from work, and he complains about his boss. And every day, every night, you know, it's a slightly different complaint, but it's still a complaint. And if I have a lot of content myself, it's hard for me to hold his content. And, you know, when we were talking about how long do you do it, you know, there's some part of me that says, I have to be present, and I have to be grounded, and I have to be available, and I have to be loving, and I have to facilitate, even if I don't want to. So I'm wondering about
where those rules are coming from.
Yeah, there's just, you know, I want to play around with, you know, Matt, I have 5 minutes for this conversation. or I actually don't have any time for this conversation. Like, if you tried something different with your boss, I'm super interested. But if it's just another complaint, you know.
I'm taking from this that Matt is not interested in recording and listening.
No, I even bought the recorder for it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, no.
And did you write Deanna, your sister? Talk to her, Matt.
But I'm seeing it's happening with several friends who are deep, deep, deep in their conditioning and don't know about disidentifying. And yeah, there's this there's a rule that I want to be of service. And so there's a few pieces. I may not have the energy to be of service. And is there...
Well, and it does it serve?
Yes.
That's the other thing, to be in a position with somebody where, I mean, you know, if you were to say, so Matt, I don't know if you've noticed this, but every night you come home and you complain about your boss. Now, if that's therapeutic for you, I'd be happy to do that with you for 10 minutes. If it's not really that important, if it's just kind of a catch-up on what happened in the day and that sort of thing, maybe you could tell me about something good that happened during your day, because I would love to hear that. I wonder if people are as fragile as we think they are, and if they're as addicted to dishonesty as we think. Because how is it loving or of service to listen to somebody over and over and over while inside feeling like, oh, for God's sake, get a therapist, okay, or another roommate.
It feels disrespectful to pretend to be available.
Exactly. When all I'm doing is thinking, please finish, please
and,
stop.
And there's such a risk of colluding with his conditioning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. And he may not even know he's doing it. It's such a habit. I don't know in all cultures, but in this culture it certainly is. How was your day? Oh, God. And then you launch into what didn't go well. And really, how is that kind to anybody?
But I think I got stuck somewhere. Marshall Rosenberg, who wrote about nonviolent communication, said, don't listen for 5 minutes longer than you want to. You know, and if I had the rule of don't listen for 2 hours longer than you want to, my life would be better.
Hook her up with your brother. Better yet, hook the brothers up.
Where I got stuck last night, though, was that you said something in a different conversation. You were saying, the goal is not just to listen to the mentor and feel good, right? And then you said something after that, which is the goal is to be of service.
Yes, but not to ego. Yeah, that and we can take as consolation one person to save. One. And that doesn't mean, you know, we're harsh or cruel to anybody else, to the best of our ability. But it also all of this stuff that that ego gets going to protect itself, but it gets presented as kind or loving or the good person way to be. And again, I just suspect that I bet your brother wouldn't want that. If he knew that this was going on, he would say, well, I don't need to do that. You know?
Yeah. Let's play cribbage.
Let's play cribbage. Or, you know, if that conversation is not available, he might be driven to talking to a recorder. Because who does want to listen to us? If we're honest. Yeah? And so if we can sort of coerce people into colluding with ego in that way because they love us, gosh.
Right.
Yeah. Kevin.
I'd love to circle back to the exercise that we started with on the retreat, the Buddha's sermon around when to speak and not speak. So I'm having a little bit, sort of a clarifying question, because I'm having...
Oh, you can't hear.
Gotcha. So a clarifying question around the exercise that we started the retreat with, around the Buddha's sermon about when to speak and not speak. I'm having a little bit of a hard time reconciling that with the sort of spontaneous, alive quality of presence that I've heard us discussing since then. So there's this, like, to me, there's this, like, the Tathagata, if this and this and this and this, but not this and this, then we talk, and if we don't talk, and it seems like there could be an invitation to just, like, get tied up in knots in conditioning, if I approach it as, like, instructions.
Yes.
And there, I mean, there are people making spreadsheets, and I felt the pull to do that myself, and... and so I'm just like, I feel like it might be useful to hear you talk about how that's
where we're going.
How do we connect that with that spontaneous alive presence that we've been?
To me, what it speaks to is how present the boy was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's aspirational, yeah.
Yeah, that it's just clear to him in the moment that which of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say this. It has nothing. It just dropped in. And so I have to say it because it's been dropping in for 2 days. And it just did at a time when I can say it. Okay? So I'm going to say it and then I'll be right back. and that is what I want more than almost anything for people is to live in the question, where am I getting that information?
Hmm.
Where am I getting that information? Instead of the, this is me thinking, this must be true, this is how I feel, this is what I think, this is reality. This goes back to the projections, the endless projections that are never checked out, right? To just constantly be asking, where am I getting that information? Which is going to turn us, I hope, toward conditioned mind, right? Because that's where we're getting the information. And so if we start questioning, where am I getting the information, there's going to start being a little gap there between what's happening and an awareness of what's happening. There, people with me on that? Yeah. Because otherwise, it just, and we just go with it, okay? So the other thing that I've been obsessed about on this retreat is the obsession that people have with getting it right. You know, so I think I said it in here. I've said it to everybody in guidance, I'm pretty sure, for at least 2 days. You know, that as soon as I get it right, I'll be spontaneous. I'll be in the moment, right? I'll have a direct experience just as soon as I know what the right answer is. Right? And so I think one of the things that that the Buddha did for us is find out. That's find out. That's what he did. Well, what about this? 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 And he didn't seem to take anybody's word for anything. He wanted his own experience of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to do that, I think one would have to pretty quickly get past the idea of making a mistake. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a scientist and you're concerned about making mistakes, get a new profession, right? and so with that, to go into it with that Buddha willingness to just find out. So you say something, and you get information. Okay, you get information from here. You get information from other people. and you get clearer, and then there the next thing, and it's just right there. It's whatever drops in for you in the moment, and you see what happens, and you have your own direct experience of that, right? And what you're doing is training yourself to be in that kind of presence, not afraid. You know, we can't make a mistake. Nothing's going to happen to us. Hell is a lie. Okay, there's no such thing. Okay, there's only the hell that we make for ourselves currently. Okay? And so we don't need to be worried about something going wrong or all of that sort of thing. You know, that's just this, and it's displeasing this, and that's what people are terrified of, right? People are not even actually that afraid of other people. It's this, right, that people are terrified of. So as we go up against that, and you just practice, and you just, you know, you're a fact-finding mission, and you want to see what happens when this, and when this, and when this, and when this.
Yeah, no, that's really resonating. I love that. And I'm imagining, well, not even imagining. So what my experience has been recently is that I'm in this work environment where I'm working with other people, and there's quite literally like there's a two-way mirror, and there's like a panel of people watching the interaction and then sort of commenting on it. and so there's a way in which I've seen some of my people in my cohort that are having that experience, when they get feedback that's sort of even not critical, but just like, hey, you might have done this differently. There's a taking it personally, and there's so much suffering.
Yes.
And that has happened to me too. It's not to say it hasn't. And more often than not so far, there's this experience of like really welcoming the feedback.
Yes.
And I'm hoping that I can stay with that when I think where the stakes get really hard is when that feedback happens, and so I'm working in a clinical setting, right? So the person opposite me may be like, the stakes could be very high.
Yes.
For that person.
Yes.
And so it's very easy to feel like it's actually my job to take care of or to save this other person.
Yes. Right? And of course, what that translates into is, the stakes are so high, I'm going to have to look to ego for direction.
Right.
Which is truly terrifying. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that's exactly what happens.
Especially when there's a panel of judges watching.
Through their egos.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, Kevin, you know, again, with an idea like mastery, it's not actually technically a requirement that we believe everything we say and do. So it's perfectly possible to know what the answer is that somebody wants and to give that to them. If what you want is for them to agree with you. If you know you're doing that, And you're taking responsibility for why you're doing that. So I work with a lot of people who are therapists, and they follow all the rules, as far as anyone can tell. But what they're doing is what they feel is the good and right and helpful thing to do. Even though it wouldn't pass the
insurance or whatever.
That's right. If somebody were watching, that's really not what they're supposed to be doing. So karma is karma. And we all have to decide what we want to take responsibility for. But following a bunch of rules, because a bunch of people made a bunch of rules. Mm-hmm. We can do that if that's what we want to do. And it's probably helpful if we realize that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And don't confuse that with anything else. Like, that it's the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sort of just, like, holding out until I get through a certain phase, and then I'll just kind of be on my own and can, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's true with just darn near anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you talk to a plumber, you know, they had to pass all the plumber stuff. But then when they get out there and they're working on the plumbing, mm-hmm. they're going to do it their way. Right? And usually what that comes down to is, because that actually is a bad way to do it. I don't know why they do it that way. I don't know why they tell us to do it that way.
And the reason why this all came up was in so that, like, the instructions of the Tathagata and all of that, with the right way to be, right? This is the right. This is when I talk, this is when I don't talk, this is when I... And that feels like that's why this brought came up for me, right?
Yes.
And it seems to be a... I cannot reconcile that with the kind of alive, like, presence that I hear us
looking
toward.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the difficulty. So, as you know, we have precepts. Oh my God, people just get into such a twist over precepts. And no matter how many times we say, they're guidelines. Mm-hmm. You know, they're something to, they're like something to blot dots. They're guardrails. They're, you know, if you run into them, you'll know. You ran into that before you went off the cliff, okay? and maybe if you ran into it, that would be something to look into, right? Because you were headed in a direction, and you know, people who have been doing this for a while have said, you know, that would be a good area of life to look into. Yeah. Rather than, okay, what's the right way? What are the rules? How do I follow the rules so that I get... And we know, how do I follow the rules? I follow the rules. Do I get information that I'm the right person? No, because who are we following the rules for? This, right? And this is never going to say, good job. You followed all the rules. You're a wonderful human being. Now, live long and prosper. It's just not going to happen, right? Yeah. Yeah, Pasha. Yeah.
So, coming back to the day...
Speak up.
Coming back to day one of the retreat, I had something that I'm not very clear. And then I had this guidance, and again, like, I couldn't fit into, like... So I just want to ask again. I apologize for not understanding. Like, how is it I see that the person I'm saving... and what I saw when I look at my son, I see the dear human being who is in the process of being conditioned, and it breaks my heart, and I'm moved to say it. It's much harder for me to see Pasha. I see some glimpses of Pasha in him, but that's immediately get dismissed as like, well, you're just imagining things. I go to a guidance appointment, and that's what you tell me it feels like, but then I walk out of that, and I get again talked that, well, that couldn't be true. She meant, that's not what she meant to say, so I had to bring it up again. Like, what is it you mean when you say that that's my experience of Pasha when I'm looking at myself? Is it because everything is experience of Pasha because I'm projecting Pasha into it?
Well, yes, we could say that. Mm-hmm. But more directly, when you look at your son and you feel that innocence and sweetness and defenselessness, and your move to want to care for him and protect him, and it breaks your heart that you see he's growing up and he's being conditioned and he's starting to suffer in a way that he didn't just a short time ago. Yeah. Where are you experiencing all of that? I'm pointing.
Yes. Yes, I'm experiencing it here. What's the next step? How can I... Because the glimpses I see Pasha is going through the same thing. There is somewhere authentic Pasha who is suffering, and then that kind of disappears, and then I'm me, I'm the I, and I just need to get through the life.
Right, yes. Well, one of the things that could be helpful is for you to cultivate that experience. And you would do that by projecting onto your son, because you're not feeling it in him, right? That's right. Your experience. At this point, he's probably not experiencing himself that way. He might have 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, but he doesn't now. So you're the only one actually having that experience of that sweetness and that innocence and the defenselessness and all of those things. And so to feel that in you and practice turning attention there.
So that's not imagining or making stuff up.
No.
Because I feel it.
Yes.
And I can just spend a little bit more time with that.
Yes.
And I'm just feeling that.
That's exactly right.
Right? And that becomes more accessible.
Yes.
What else is more accessible to me? When I go to 12-step meeting, I see people suffering, and I'm just like, wow, this is so close. I understand. I don't want Pasha suffer like this. And that brings, like, up in my face.
Yes. And when you look at those people, do you feel that that same thing for them? Yes.
For him?
For them. You see how those people are suffering, and you feel it in the same way.
Yeah.
You can see their innocence. You can see their goodness. And you can see that they can't see it. And it's heartbreaking that they can't see who they really are. That if they could see who they really are.
That part I'm missing. What I see their suffering, and I'm moved to save them. And I'm moved to be there for them, spend time, let's have a meeting, you know, we're together, we can do that.
Okay, then the next time that happens, I want you to feel where you feel that.
Yeah.
Where you feel that compassion.
Yes. I feel that compassion, and that compassion is also I feel for Pasha there.
Yes.
And I don't want Pasha to go off the rail, you know, in between the meetings into the ditch.
Yes.
Right?
But here's my best encouragement. To stay with that experience. Don't turn it into things. Don't turn it into what I want to do for these people, or how I need to fix this, or how I need to change that, or how I need to, or what could happen to him. Stay with the experience. Because that experience of that loving kindness and that compassion is who you are. That's the awareness. It's the same thing. It's who you are.
Yes, I will do that. I'll promise.
Okay, good man.
The question is still, how is it, why is it so hard for me to see Pasha?
Because you haven't practiced that. Yes. And that's why conditioned mind wants you so quickly to go to something else. To fix it, to take care of them, to get up here. Mm-hmm. Right? And what you're practicing is staying here. And because, so, you know, you walk outside to the rabbit and you say, "I love you, bunny. Do you love me?" And the bunny says, "Yes, I do." Yeah. And then you try it with a tree and the, are they rhododendrons or camellias or whatever the heck those are? Yeah. And has everybody visited Mother Teresa?
Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Try that with her. Yeah. Yeah. Get a big old hit. So as you practice that more, you will realize how often you're having that experience. You'll realize that that's what's there every time you come here. Okay?
Yes, every time I come here, not only on the retreat, I'm coming here.
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 Yes.
Yes. And just right now, conditioned mind is just like pulling me so hard.
Yes.
To the next thing, what that will mean.
That's right.
But I'm not going to go there.
That's right. It's the equivalent of, okay, well, now what do I do?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, well, what do I do?
Yes.
And we know that place. And yes, the pull is tremendous. You know, ourselves back here.
Yeah.
To just the awareness, just the presence.
Yes. And I know that place, you know, and I talk to the trees and to the rabbit, and I can spend endless amount of time there.
Yes.
And
this is good.
Yeah, this
and,
is good.
And the next thing, as you're practicing that, instead of going out from there to get engaged in things, start bringing things into that. Just bring them in. Plenty of room. You can bring the whole meeting in. Mm-hmm. You can bring all those people in.
See,
you can just stay there with them. Just be there with them.
What is it? I mean, am I not? I'm not understanding the last part. How can I bring in the whole meeting? I can walk into a meeting with that.
That's right.
Right, and I can practice staying there.
Yep.
Through a whole meeting.
That's right.
Yeah.
And as you're staying there in the whole meeting, what you'll begin to sense is you can't tell where that stops. So we talk about it as being here, right? But is it really here?
It's bigger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, as we practice with it, as we continue to pay attention, we realize there are no boundaries.
Mm.
So that's that place of it's in you and you're in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. All I need to know how to function from that place.
No, you have to practice it first.
Have to practice,
yeah,
yes.
Because otherwise it's like saying, now explain to me how to walk.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. Now, okay, I got that. But now where do I go after I know how to walk?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to practice walking.
Get the walking down.
Yes.
And then the rest will follow.
Thank you.
All right. That's us. Yes?
So it's New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's right. Oh, and I have one thing to say, because I know that because I have my New Year's Eve outfit on. Very excited about that. But I have something, again, that I've thought about many, many times, and I asked Ashwini actually to mention it tomorrow, too, to remind me in the last meeting that we have. You know, with this retreat, there, you know, it's kind of always true, but I'm going to say, especially with this retreat, I hope you won't leave this retreat and start trying to teach your friends and relations how to do this. Try to explain to them how to, and, you know, don't do that, okay? If you have people that you really want to have do this, then have them do this. And then after they do, they can converse with you and communicate with you and that sort of thing. And I think we have this coming up in May, right?
Yes, at Santa Sabina.
At Santa Sabina, right up the road. So, and then of course we have it in the fall in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is a long time to wait.
What about Asheville in spring?
Asheville. No,
there's
Asheville.
There's a TINW in Asheville. Yeah. There's no. There's we're able to get dates for this retreat at the retreat center.
Yeah. So that just an encouragement. Just just kind of keep it to yourself and don't start practicing on people.
So the second thing we were going to mention is just because you feel like you've learned something, don't expect other people to want to do this with you. But the encouragement that Cherry was wanted us to all have is it's our awareness practice. Mm-hmm. And so I learned to facilitate or self-facilitate or however it is for my practice so that I'm not suffering. Right? What happens with anyone else is what happens with anyone else. So I don't know if you want to speak to that, Sherry. That was the other thing you wanted to, or that was enough.
That feels right. Mm-hmm. Does it? Did people there? Yeah. All right, so what happens tonight? What happens tonight?
So we have a tradition of ending 1 year the way we want to begin the next year.
And live the next year.
And live the next year. And so we meditate through the new year. The meditation is completely informal. The hall will be available for everyone to come and go, meditate as much as you want, sit for 20 minutes, leave, come back. But once group is over, I think we can start at around 8:45 or 9, and we are meditating right through the new year. So the formal sit will be at 11:45, so people are requested to be seated in the hall at 11:40 for the final formal sit. But you're welcome to be in and out of the hall doing sitting meditation or walking meditation. It won't be guided, so you're completely on your own schedule.
And my best encouragement, I know that there are people who go, yeah, I hate that. And I'll be there at 11:45, but till then I'm going to take a nap. I just really encourage you not to fall for that, because it is... I mean, I wore my special outfit. It is so fun. Once you get past this, it is so fun to be with Sangha in that way, and it's so you're on your own. You can sit as much as you want. You can go outside and look at the moon, or go visit Mother Teresa, or whatever. Come back in and sit, and it's just the most wonderful. Way to spend an evening, and so that's just my strongest encouragement that you can sleep anytime.
Mm-hmm. And of course, because it's New Year's and we're Buddhists, we have to have a party.
Exactly.
So between our sitting, all of our party snacks will be in the dining hall. And so you're welcome to sample the treats that are set out as you sit.
Yeah, eat them out there and then
sit in here.
And
I think we'll actually turn the lights on in the dining hall as soon as soon as the snacks are ready to serve.
All right.
Because all the monk elves are going off to get it all ready.
Ah,
and then it's ready.
Okay. Then we'll turn the lights on. They'll put it all together in the dark.
The kitchen.
Ah, okay.
Where the lights will be on.
Okay. It's exciting.
If we want to alternate between seated practice and walking meditation.
Yes.
In the hall. Walking
in the hall. Outside. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Any.
Just making sure walking in the hall.
It's perfectly fine. Yeah. Now, if you're wearing clothes that go, when you walk. Change clothes, okay, or do walking meditation outside, because that is truly distressing. Yeah.
Is it 11:45 that's the formal?
Yes, 11:45 we'll all
sit
formal.
So I think we normally ring a bell at 11:30, to let everyone know that the sit's in 15 minutes, and you need, it would be good to be seated in the hall at 11:40. Can someone ring the bell, volunteer? Janice, maybe on the women's side, someone on the men's side, volunteer to ring the bell. Great, Paul. So I'll give you the bell when we get to the to the main building.
And 11:30,
just ring the bell around so that people know that we're getting ready to sit at 11:45.
Yeah.
Just a request. Could you make sure there's enough chairs in case a lot of people want to sit in chairs? Because if we're all coming in for an 11:45 sit.
Are you saying that there aren't sufficient chairs for people to be seated in chairs for meditation?
Yes.
I see. That's okay. Fine.
Where's Mother Teresa?
Yeah.
Oh, she's over in the, there's a new, is it, what's it called? The Garden of
Works.
Carnival Works. Yeah. Did
I haven't seen it.
Oh.
It's on the other side of the statue that's lit.
Okay.
In the entranceway.
Mm.
So you see the statue, the Christ statue that's lit, and if you just walk straight.
Yeah. It's right in front of
the block here that had, there are two blocks for where the women are staying,
mm-hmm.
on this side.
On the street side.
On the street side.
Mm-hmm. It's that whole huge area, and she's in the back.
Great.
Yeah, it's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that it? We good? Oh.
Can we get just a really brief, how do you do walking meditation?
Sure, absolutely, yeah. You want a demo?
Sure.
Okay. Just right up here on the stage. Just
trip.
Yeah, just relax. And be natural.
So there are a couple of hand positions you could use. One is to cup the fingers over your left thumb, about chest height, putting the right hand on top, resting the thumbs like so, and having the arms at about that height. Or you can also walk in Gesho. And so the idea is to pick up one foot, bring it forward so that the heel is about in line with the toes of the other foot, and then bringing the next foot forward. And you're just walking in a nice, slow, steady shape.
And measure to the breath.
And then often at the end of a walking meditation, people will walk quickly, but I think the encouragement, if you're going to do that, would be to do that outside.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we're not hooking in as a line, we're just walking independently.
Just independently, yeah. So you could walk like that in here, out there.
But the first time that I took part in this, I thought we were going to meditate all night. I just want to. Anybody who has that idea, that's not what happens.
So you make a run for your bedroom right now. Forget that bell, right? Yeah. No, we'll be doing the independent sitting, walking until 11:30, the bell will ring, and then we will all come in 11:45, and we will sit. Yeah, bring in the new year. Yeah, there will be sleep happening at some point tonight. Okay, we good?
And the schedule for tomorrow is posted.
Schedule for tomorrow is posted.
Mm-hmm.